Okay, we would like to thank Karen and Jacob Levis for sponsoring this morning's Locks and Learn. Leila Nishmas, Jake's beloved parents, Leah ben Abba and Leah bas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yeshua ben Shimon Dov, and Neshama should have an Aliyah. Amen. You should have two sheets in front of you. One is our regular type of source sheets in a Word document, and the other should be a photocopy of the Maharal. This looks like a photocopy. We'll get to that later. Anybody need a source sheet? Everybody's good? Okay. So, we're starting a new Mishnah in Perkei Avos. We spent a ton of time on the last Mishnah or two, and we are about to go further. We're up to Mishnah 10 in Perek 2. And for those of you who think that means we've accomplished a lot, remember we started at Mishnah 8. So we still have to do 1 through 7. So we've done basically 8 and 9. Now we're up to 10. And we're starting to see the statements, the specific statements of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's students. We saw that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai characterized his students, gave them a certain amount of praise, and then asked them a specific question: what's the straight path that they should cling to? They gave an answer to that. They asked what's the path that they should stay away from? They gave an answer to that. Now we're about to go through the statements of each of the five students. They're each going to say three things. We'll have to count because there's going to be a challenge here on how we calculate these three things. But they're each going to say three things on their own, independent ideas that are not connected necessarily to anything about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So they're sort of going off in their own direction at this point. And we start with the first of the students mentioned, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Just for our own Chazara review, slash perhaps, and I want us to be thinking about this, maybe what we've learned about him already will be relevant to what he's about to say. Maybe not. I'll leave that up to you to think about as we go further. But at the very least, for review, what do we know about Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus? Who remembers? He's the first person on the list. Every single time we spoke about anything, he was the first one mentioned, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Anything he said, anything about his character, anything about his personality, anything, anybody remember anything? So he's the one who said Ayin Tova, to have a good eye. He's the one who said to stay away from having an Ayin Hara, to stay away from having a bad, or Ayin Ra, to having a bad eye. Anybody? He was the one who his praise was that he remembered everything, he absorbed everything. And anybody remember anything about the history, how he related to his friends and people around him? Anything that happened to him at the end of his life? He was excommunicated. He was thrown out of the community because he held strong to his beliefs. He was follower of Beit Shammai. At the time, Beis Hillel was prevailing, and he stuck to his guns, and eventually that got him thrown out. So think about that. Again, I'm not saying there's an automatic parallel to what he's about to say, but think about that as we read what his messages are. So starting at source number one, Mishnah Perkei Avos, Perek Beis, Mishnah Yud, Heim Amru Shlosha Shlosha Dvarim. So they each said three things. There's some commentaries here who discuss why does it say two times. Some say it only says it once. Whatever, maybe you can learn something from it, but we're not going to focus on that now. They each said Shlosha Shlosha Dvarim, Rabbi Eliezer Omer. So he says the following. Now, I'm the one who broke this into five different things. In the Mishnah, there's obviously no specific numbers put to each one. So I broke it down just so we can have an easy reference. So remember, we just said that he's about to say three things. And then, at least according to my count, there's at least five things here that he says. So let's try to figure this out. So one thing he says, let's read through it, and then we'll talk about it for a while. The one thing he says is Yehi kavod chaverecha chaviv alecha kishelcha, that the honor of your friend should be as dear to you as your own. And we're going to spend some time today in the second part of this year analyzing, figuring out exactly what the message of that is. The second thing he says, or perhaps maybe the second thing he says, Ba'al tehi noach lichos, you should not be easily provoked to anger. The next thing he says, Vishuv yom echad lifnei misascha, you should repent the day, one day before you die. The next thing he says is Vahave mischamem keneged oran shel chachamim, you should warm yourself by the fires of the wise. Behebe, the next thing, Behebe Zahir, Begafalasan, Shalosechabe, you should be, you know, you're standing next to their fires, but you should be aware of their glowing coals so you don't get burned. Shinishichasa Nashicha Shual, because the bite of a sage is the bite of a fox. The Akitsasan Akitsats Akrav, their sting is the sting of a scorpion. Vilchishasan Lachishas Sarav, and their hiss is the hiss of a serpent. Vichol Debrahim Kigathalayesh, and everything they say are like coals of fire. Now, remember, we're going to spend time understanding what that means. We're not going to spend time today talking about that specifically, but just for the context to show how there's a number of things he's saying, it's just reading it, you're taken aback. Like, what? This is how we view our sages, this is what they are. So we have to understand a little bit deeper what's going on here, but we'll save that probably for either next week or the week afterwards. But for now, where in the world are the three things? Right, so you could play around, and we will do this. Maybe you could say it's really four things. Maybe you connect one thing to the other. At the end of the day, all the Mefarshim are going to be struggling with this question, is how do you get to three things? And we're actually going to use that perhaps as a tool to better understand what the Mishnah is telling us. If we're limited to the fact that there really should be three things here, that means we're going to have to perhaps make connections between 1 and 2, or 2 and 3, or 3 and 4, 4 and 5, etc. And this might be some good insight that we're going to get out of that. Does anybody have any, just off the top of your heads, any ideas how to, just briefly, we're not going to spend so much time guessing.
But six.
Oh, interesting. So maybe shlosha meant six, 3 and 3. Good, okay. So we'll see, the Maharal says something along those lines. I don't know if he's specifically referring to the fact that it says shlosha, but maybe he is. We'll read it aside in a few minutes. So maybe here there's six, but then you're going to run into another problem. Why? Because it says Haim Amru Shlosha Shlosha. Then we're going to have to find six for each one of them. And it's a little bit trickier on the other ones. There seems to be a little bit more straightforward on the threes.
Even only says it once.
Right, and the other gear says, there are other versions that only say it once. So maybe your answer is good, but it's going to create some more for some people, and it's going to create some problems either way. Yeah? Right, so 4 and 5 you could easily connect together. So that leaves you with 4.
So then I might connect 2 and 3.
Okay, so maybe you'll connect 2 and 3, and we'll see, there are people who do that. You could connect 1 and 2. We'll spend time today specifically talking about connecting 1 and 2 together. And if you do that, then again, the answer, just we're going to delve into this more deeply, but it would be 1 and 2 are together, 4 and 5 are together, and 3 is together. Or as Dr. Panzer said, maybe 2 and 3 are together. The Abarbanel says that. We'll speak about that perhaps next week. So again, so there'd be some sort of combinations. We're going to see some other answers. So let's just jump in here. Source number 2. So Rabbeinu Yonah deals specifically with this question, and the first bunch of sources we're going to see are all going to be dealing with this question. How do you get to the count of 3? So Rabbeinu Yonah here says, Haim Amru, source number 2, Talmidei Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai Shlosha Shlosha Dvarim. So he did have the version that it says 3, 3. Kama v'kama Dvarim Amru. So they said a number of things. Ella wrote to Lomar, Shayu Regilim Kol Echa Lomar Shlosha Dvarim. So there's another question we could ask. Is it true? I mean, if you take this just at face value, they only said 3 things in their entire life, right? They said 3 things. So obviously that's not true. So it has to be that these are 3 things that are in a specific category as a starting point, right? These are 3 specific things that they said. So Rabbeinu Yonah said, what are these 3 specific things? What's the context? Why only these 3 things? Because it's the things that they were regilin kol echa lomar shlosha dvarim bichol yom. They said each one of these things every day. This was a mantra, this was a repeated message that they either repeated to themselves or to other people or both every single day. So obviously they said lots and lots of things, but it's these 3 things that they said. Okay, so that's very nice, but we still have 5 or 6 things here. So it starts to answer the question, but not completely. So these are 3 things they said all the time. As it says in the Gemara, points in time, Margala Bapume Durav, Bidvar Matsurichim Tadir, there's a concept that these are things, these are words that were recurrent in the mouths of X, Y, or Z sage. This is their mantra. This was their go-to. This was their mission statement, if you will, that they repeated over and over. It's a drush that they gave, you know, 10 times a year, because it was that message that they wanted to drive home. So it was the thing that they said over and over and over again. So in terms of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, so the Rabbi Yonah, what he does is he splits. He says that one in our list, one, two, and three, and then he splits four and five away from one, two, and three. And he says that one, two, and three are things that he said every day. Four and five he didn't say every day. So the Mishnah is telling us three things he said repeatedly, and then, you know, tacking on the end, you know, just adding on at the end, that here's some things that he said, not every day, but he liked to say sometimes. So the Shlosha Dvarim, to the middle of that second line, the first three things, halalu, margalisa bepume d'Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, mipnei shem dvarim shetzrichim l'kol adam tadir. So these three messages, you should worry about your friend's honor, you should be slow to anger, and you should do repentance every day before the day before you die, which presumably means every day because we don't know when we're going to die. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But these three things are so important that he needed to repeat over and over and over again. But, next line, v'zeh hadavar, meaning the last thing of being warmed by the fire of the wise and not being bit by their, etc. V'zeh hadavar eino min ha-shlosha shemina Rabbi Eliezer Omer, this is not one of the things that's included. He didn't say this every day. So the one time he was able to intellectualize, or be able to internalize that I should respect the Chachamim, I should be close to Chachamim, that's enough. That's not something that there's such a huge Yetzer Hara, or that there's something that I'm going to keep forgetting about over and over again, so I have to remind myself. This is just a simple message that he used to tell himself, he used to tell other people, once in a while, once a year, once in his lifetime, whatever, be respectful of the sages, get close to the sages, but be aware that, you know, don't get too close, apparently, because they can bite you. But that was, again, the point here for us, is that that's not something that he said all the time. The first three things required internalization. These are hard to deal with, the honor of my friend. I can know that up here, but I have to repeat it over and over and over and over again in order to get it over here. Not to be angry so easily. Again, I know it in theory, but then in practice it's a little bit harder to internalize, so I need constant reminders. To repent every day, that's a hard thing to do. That takes a mindset, a shift in our perspective as to how we're going to behave every single day. That requires something that's constant reminders. Those are the things he said over and over and over again. The last thing was just a one-time thing. That's how Rabbeinu Yonah distinguishes and says, three, he said all the time. This last part, not so often. It's a little bit weird, because at the end of the day, the Mishnah does not distinguish. The Mishnah does not say these things he said all the time and this thing he only said once. The Mishnah just lops them all together. So he's adding some of his own reading into the Mishnah, but at the end of the day, that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. Yeah?
On what basis did Rabbi Yonah say that?
Again, it's not internal to the text that he can say, and he is adding a lot to the text, as I, you know, just mentioned. There's no real firm basis to it. He's just dealing with this problem of where do you get the three? We'll see there's other ways to resolve the issue as well. Okay? Yeah.
I think there are two things. Number one, Ben Tamur, Shmashan Rabin in the past. Ben Eliezer Omer, present. That's just the point. And that now,
yeah, that's probably very relevant, but you have to think about the ones that they said in the past, but they continually say, he continually says. So it's an interesting thing in general, how when usually when things are written in the Talmud, it says it in the present tense, right? So he says, even though he said in the past. So interesting thing here is you're pointing out that the opening statement says it in the past. So maybe there's something there we have to delve into a little bit, okay?
And point number two, I see from the five, four out of the Ben Adam HaBevo, and only one,
Shu Yom HaDinem Uchav, is Ben Adam HaMakom. Okay, so Rabbi Shiloni's making another interesting move here, and he's saying maybe when we say that they said three things, we're talking about three categories of things. Right, so it doesn't have to be three specific statements. It could be statements in three specific areas. And now that opens up a whole new opportunity for us to understand what three categories can we fit these five or six statements in. And now the Heimam Rushlosha Dvarim is not three statements, but three main ideas. And that gives us a lot to work with. So we're going to see that. Think about that as we go forward. Rabbi Shlomi started doing a Bein Adam L'Malka, Bein Adam L'Chavero thing. That gives you two. So you got to add a third. Think about three different categories of things that we can separate these statements into. Yeah.
Also, maybe the second shlosha is not for emphasis.
Right.
To say that three of those things are very important, like on a daily basis. And so the second shlosha maybe, you know, it didn't mean that it was six.
Right.
But just concentrate on those.
Three. Okay, so maybe that's the way that he read to answer Freddie's question. That's the way that he read three. Three means that he's reading in the text. It's three specifically that we do all the time, and then there's some other ones. You could break four and five into three. So it could be said three things that I said all the time, and three things that I say some of the time. We're going to see the Maharal does something slightly similar. I'm going to take two brief statements, and then we're going to move forward. Yeah, you're up.
Yeah, we're
going to
do what Rabbi Sharon was saying. First of all of these statements are interpersonal. They're not Ben Adam Lamakom per se. They're all on the right side, on the left side of that chart.
Maybe number three, right?
Well.
To do tshuva depends what type of tshuva. Depends what type of tshuva you're doing, right?
It could be a tshuva. That view is internal. In other words, one of them is between you and people. One of them is internal, between you and yourself. Making peace with yourself, and the last over there would be the one between you and Rabbi.
Sages. Okay, good. So Yoram's adding an interesting element. We're going to see this in the Maharal shortly. And if you remember, the Maharal said something like this. I think we mentioned it in the first year. The Maharal divvies up, and it's a recurring theme, that there's Bein Adam L'Makom, Bein Adam L'Chavero, and then Bein Adam L'Atzma. Okay, so there is this internal character, what's good for you, and so we'll see that in the Maharal in a second. Yes, sir.
The other one is you can read it with the comma. Maybe there's like an overlap there.
Yeah, that could be. So either you could read it in the number, either shlosha, comma, shlosha, good. You could read it for emphasis, maybe six. You could do a lot of things. So good. So keep. I like when we think about just that's all commentators do. You know, with some probably, and obviously know a lot more than us, but a lot of times it just drifts the text in front of you. Let's think of creative ideas to how to read it. So good, that's what we should be doing. So keep doing that. So let's see source number three, the Rambam. So how does the Rambam deal with this issue? Okay, everybody, source number three, the Rambam says that they mischavim keneged uran. So when he talks about number four and five on our list, Ein hu ma'amaro asher chinech bo. The Rambam says, like Rabbeinu Yonah, but he's going to go in a slightly different direction, that number 4 and 5 have absolutely nothing to do with this statement in Pirkei Avos. Ela mimashe shamu mizuwaso b'sipro mipneze lo nimna b'chal ma'amaro. So Rambam distinguishes, there are three things that he said, Rabbi Lezer said over and over and over again, sort of on his own, which is a slight problem, because if you remember, it's extra credit. Rabbi Lezer was the one who said, because he had such a great memory, and he was part of Beit Shammai, he was the one who said that I never said anything that I didn't hear from my Rebbe. So that's a little bit of a question some ask on this Rambam, because the Rambam's here basically distinguishing, here are three things that he says on his own, independently, and then the last thing, 4 and 5, he said because he heard somebody else say it. So the Shlosha Dvarim are the things that he said constantly, consistently on his own, and then 4 and 5 are things that he heard, and we just added it onto this list over here. Okay, you can like it, you don't have to like it. That's how the Rambam says it. The Meiri has two other fascinating explanations here in source number four. First, go to the... In source number four, I separated for you three different sections there. So first do the second section, so the part that says V'chein. So it's a third line in source number four. So this is a simpler explanation. We'll go back to the first one and the second. V'chein yesh l'farah shekol echad mehem amar gimel dvar l'miut. Very simply, they said at least three things. So when it says they said three things, it means they said at least three things. So everybody else said three things. He said five things. You know? Okay, so that's just one explanation how the Meiri does it, a simple way out of it. Now go back to the first thing he says. Heim amru gimel dvarim kilomar. Kol echad mehem, each one said three things. The Afal Pi Shebedivrei Rabbi Eliezer Yesh Ben Yoser Mishalosh, even though Rabbi Eliezer has more than three, Yesh Mifarshim Shenichlula B'Dvarav Rotze Lomar Bebe Mischamim Eino Michlal Dvarav Shel Afshav. So again, like Rabbeinu Yonah, like the Rambam, he says that number four and five are not relevant directly over here. Rather, and this is fascinating, Ela B'Makom Acher Amrav, he said them in a different context. Umagihe hasfarim arvua kan. And the people who the compilers of the Mishnah threw it on over here. So not a typo. They, and this is an important point for us to remember. I think I've made this point in the past. When we look at these Mishnayos, sometimes we're brainwashed and we don't think about them. There's an added element that we could think about here. There's what these people said in context at the time, but it's not, that's not how things were delivered, right? Things were then written down later, and now that gives us a whole added thing to think about. It's not just the commentary of the person speaking, but it's a commentary on the people who are writing it. So they have the power to put things together. And that's why whenever we talk about Mishnayot, we say, why is this Mishnah connected to this Mishnah? Right? Why is Nazir connected to Sotan? Why is this? Because we learn about things based on the fact that they're juxtaposed. So here, it's not just that Rabbi Eliezer said something. It's that Rabbi Eliezer said these three things, and then the person who's compiling, who's writing this specific Mishnah, took something else that he said from a different place and placed it on over here. Before your question, there's a reason why they did this. There's an explanation as to why they did this. The Meiri talks about it. I'm not getting into it now because it's detailed and it requires a lot of background on other Mishnayos, and we're just going to take it for granted. I just wanted to bring out the point here is that the reason why it's added here, not the reason why, but that it, at least we could explain that it was added here from a different place in order to teach us some other lesson, but it's not one of those original three that he said. Yeah, laser them out.
I just want to make a comment.
Yeah.
This is the technique in the Gemaras, which you read. When a rabbi which has a few statements, they attach other statements to that one, right. Which is...
So this isn't completely foreign to Talmudic process. It is a little bit strange. In this Mishnah, we don't see this in other places, but you're right, it's not completely foreign. Yeah, Helen, and then we'll move on to the next one. Yeah, so good. So in terms of his character, in terms of the context of his what happened to him, this whole thing about staying away from, you know, Chachamim to an extent because they can fight could be relevant to him. If you remember, we also saw not just that he was, quote-unquote, bitten by others. He, when we spoke about Ayin Hara, when he had the ability to, like, tase people with his bitter eye because he was so hurt by what happened to him. So you're right. So this could be very, very relevant to that point. Let's keep going. We'll take questions in a moment. Okay, good. So in the last thing the Meiri says is an important methodological point as well. The Meiri says here in the, now we're skipping to the third section of what the Meiri says here in Sefer Before. He says Barishon Iker. I think that first explanation is correct, meaning the explanation that this was just added by the editors later on. Varayel Dabar, he brings a proof. Because we have a commentary on Maseches Avos, we've mentioned this in the past, that there's a commentary of Chazal on Pirkei Avos. So there's a very early commentary from the, you know, second, third, fourth generation of the sages of the Talmud who comment on Pirkei Avos. It's a very early, it's called Avos Rabbi Nasan, the very early Perush. And if you look in Avos Rabbi Nasan, which is always an important thing to do, if you want to try to figure out what's Pirkei Avos saying, so we're looking at medieval commentators. But the first thing you should do is look at the earliest commentators possible. What do they say? So in Avos Rabbi Nasan, it says, Shelo huzkru sham ela shalosh rishonos. In Avos Rabbi Nasan, it only mentions the first three. It leaves off this whole thing about these chachamim biting and, you know, getting close to these chachamim. So Meiri brings this as a proof that it shows that really the first three are the most important, and the last two were added later by, you know, the people who were putting together, editing the book. Okay, so that's the Me'iri. Now, turn to your handout. Source number 5 is your handout. It's the Derech Chaim, is the Maharal. So the Maharal here, again, I've shown you this book numerous times. The Maharal himself has a long commentary, Derech Chaim, in Hebrew. As I've mentioned in the past, the Maharal, not as much as the Abarbanel. We said the Abarbanel, writes a lot. Maharal also writes a lot and repeats himself to some extent during his writings. So it takes time to go through it. This book, Rabbi Tuvia Bass, who put out by Art Scroll, it translates and edits and makes it a little bit more easily to digest, not just in terms of the Hebrew, but also in terms of the extracting the main ideas. So here in source number, in the handout, page 122, so he has two important ideas that I want to bring out. Number one, where it says Mishnah 15 on the right-hand column. So they each said three things. So why three things? Why did each one of these rabbis say precisely three things? And why, I'm reading inside, why did Rabbi Eliezer say six things, not three? So his count is six, not three. So in words of Musar, if words of Musar are to be effective and useful, they must be kept in mind at all times. This is reminiscent of Rabbeinu Yonah. This is something we're repeating. So a group of three related items is easy to remember because any one of the items calls to mind the other two. So Maharal makes a point in terms of memory. The reason why, and think about almost everything we've seen so far in all of our Pirkei Avos, Mishnayos, are three things. Right? Heimam Amur Shlosha Dvarim, Al Torah, Avoda, Gnus Chasad. Right? Every single statement, almost, maybe each one, I have to go through it, is in threes. So Maharal saying is that there's a reason why that's true. It's because in terms of our memory, we remember things in patterns of threes better than just twos and better than just one and better than just four. Four or five, maybe too much. One and two are isolated ideas. Three makes it into categories, makes it easy to remember. I forget one, but I remember the other two, so now I can remember its connection, and now I can figure it out, I can remember it. So that's why the Maharal says we always focus on three. But now he goes in Rabbi Shiloni's direction. For this reason, each rabbi chose three pieces of advice dealing with a single subject. Rabbi Eliezer used the same technique of presenting three related pieces of advice, but he did so for two subjects. He gave three pieces of practical advice that enhanced relationships, and three more that round out the intellect. So again, Maharal is saying there's six things here, and there's two sets, as Rachel said, three and three, there's two sets of threes in terms of what we're trying to learn. The first set, going with Yoram's point, is in terms of relationships, and the second set is in terms of wisdom. I'm not going to focus on the wisdom now. That's how he deals with the rabbis and the fire, etc. Let's just to get a piece of what he's telling us, focus on the relationship. So left-hand column here, says Rabbi Eliezer says, a person relates with his world in three dimensions. One interacts with Ben Adam Lechaber, other people, Ben Adam Atzma, oneself, and Ben Adam Makom, God. Rabbi Eliezer has advice to enhance each of these relationships. So first, A, is with other people. Cherishing the honor of other people assures success in interpersonal relationships. B, anger undermines the very fabric of a person. We're gonna deal with anger in detail next week. But the point here is that anger, he looks at Ben Adam La'atzma. If you're angry, that basically destroys other relationships and maybe the relationship with God as well, but it really destroys you more than anybody else. And then finally, Shuv Yom Echad Lifnei Misasta, repent one day before your death. That's the Ben Adam L'Makom. So here he takes the categories, three categories. Each one is teaching us something about our relationships. And then perhaps next week we'll speak about how he deals with the wisdom on the second half of the Mishnah. I'll take a question in a second. Let me just see. Okay, fine. So this is end of part A. We're going to talk about part B in a second after I take a question or two. Yeah.
I just wanted to point out that the memory is So even though we have it written down, this was done orally until that point.
Okay, so I'm actually going to elaborate on what you said. I didn't think about this until now, but this is let's connect this to Rabbi Eliezer. What does Rabbi Eliezer have? A good memory, right? So now, here's an interesting thing. We mentioned this in the past. You could have just argued that Rabbi Eliezer had such a good memory, so it's not even relevant to us because it was just God-given talents that he has such a great memory. But here, if you go with the Maharal, the message here is that even if you have a good memory, we're still going to use strategies in order to enhance and increase our memory. So in order to be able to recall it. So we're going to put things in threes. We're going to put things in categories in order that later on we can retrieve it and we can recall it in an appropriate way. So it's not just a God-given talent to have a good memory, but tying it back to Rabbi Eliezer's own midah of being a bor sud, shein ma'abed tifla, that he doesn't forget anything. It's not just that. He put strategies in place in order that he doesn't forget. Okay, good point. Now, part B, here's we're going to start talking about kavod, honor, a little bit. What do the Mefarshim say about this first of the things that Rabbi Eliezer says in terms of honor? This is the bottom, still on page one. They're on the regular handout, not the photocopy. You can put the photocopy to the side. We're done with that for now, or for today. So, still on page one on the bottom. We're up to source number six. So the Rabbeinu Yonah gives, I think, the most straightforward, simple explanation. What does it mean? We'll just read on top the statement again in Pirkei Avos. Yihi kavod chavercha chaviv alecha kishelcha, that the honor of your friend should be as dear to you as your own. So Rabbeinu Yonah now in source number six says, what does this mean? Hilchos derech eretz shanu kamts. This is just a good message in terms of interpersonal relationships, how we interact with other people. L'chazer achar kavod chavero. We should try to give. We should run after really the honor of our friends. V'yachkotz ki yichabdu kasher chafetz b'chavod atzma. We should want. We should desire to honor other people, to honor our friends, just like we want honor to ourselves, sort of like a v'ahavta l'recha kamocha type of point. This is what I would want, so I want to give it to my friend as well. And this is a hard thing for us as humans to do, because we think that giving honor to others means that that's going to definitionally take away from our own honor. But the message here is that, A, don't worry about that. And who knows, another statement in Pirkei Avos that addresses this question as well. Another statement in Pirkei Avos. How do I get honor? By actually honoring others. So we think, like our go-to sort of standard way of thinking about things is that it's like a zero-sum game. If I give honor to others, that means that there's not enough honor to give to me. And what Pirkei Avos is telling us both here and in that statement that I just mentioned is that no, the way that there's enough honor to go around. And by you giving honor to others, not only does not detract from your own honor, but it actually increases your own honor. So if you want to be selfish about this, you know, give honor to others so you can get your own honor. Probably is not going to work out so well. I think the idea here is that don't worry about your own. Just give to others, with a slight caveat. So look at source number seven. Same page on the bottom here. So the Leiv Avos, I think, has a deep psychological insight here. Leiv Avos kasav shibamesh sha'amar she'ek kavod ha'chaver chaviv alecha kishelcha. What does it mean that it should be like yours? The honor should be like your honor. Ramaz bezeh shelo yehav kavod chaveru yoser mi kavod atzma. You shouldn't love or desire or want the honor of your friend more than your own desire of honor. Why? Ki mi she'eino rotze b'chavod atzmo, I efshar shiratze b'chavod acheru. If you don't care about your own honor, then you can't give honor to other people. And there's two ways to understand this. I'm just finishing what he says. Ki kvod l'acherim kolonu. Because if I don't have self-respect, if I don't honor myself, this doesn't mean being arrogant and it doesn't mean running after honor, but if I don't have enough self-respect to care about my own honor, then I am going to do things that make myself look disgraced amongst other people. And guess what? If I then honor somebody, nobody's going to care. Right? So you have to have enough self-respect and decency to take care of your own honor, and then all of a sudden, your honor can affect be effective to other people. And the other way to understand this is just that if you don't have enough self-respect, if you don't care about yourself enough, then you might not psychologically be able to give honor to other people. Because then all of a sudden all the jealousy is going to come into place. And you're always going to want, you know, it's like, I can't give you the honor because I need the honor myself. So there's a baseline of honor that we need to internalize for ourselves. We have to create ourselves, conduct ourselves with kavod abrios, with a basic sense of human dignity, and we have to internalize that. This isn't to disgrace ourselves. This isn't to debase ourselves. We need to have that for ourselves. And then we can go about and making sure that we give it to other people. And we should want to give it to other people. And we could only, according to the Leib Avos, one of the ways I'm reading what he's saying, the only way we can want to give it to other people is if we're sort of solidified in having it on our own. And so maybe it's like love. You have to love yourself in order to love others. Good parable or muscle. Yeah.
Another explanation. What about heart is something that belongs to him? It should be like his money. It should be like not like my money. Kishelcha. His kavod is my kavod.
Okay.
I give him kavod because
by me like giving him kavod, it's actually giving myself kavod.
It's his.
Right.
Oh. It's Shelly.
Okay.
Shelach, Shelly, Shelly, Shelach.
Okay, very good. So let's flip the page. Let's try to do a few more sources before we end. So source number 8 takes this whole explanation and sort of turns it on its head. So until now, we've been conceptualizing, we've been understanding, what does it mean that my friend has on? I should be giving my friend honor, right? I have to give my friend honor. Here, source number 8 has two sources where it's not talking about me giving my friend honor, it's actually teaching me a lesson about what do I do when my friend gives me honor. Okay, so let's see what that means. Look at source number 8 here. The Divrei Avos, Kasav Lefarish, Sheba Tana Lomar, Shein Nechsha V'chaviv V'einecha HaKabot Shechabducha B'nei Adam, Kishiyoshivucha B'makom Gavoa B'nechbad, So when somebody gives you this tremendous amount of kavod, they put you in a nice seat on the platform, and they call you Rebbe, teacher, etc. So you should look at that kavod that you get as if you were giving yourself the kavod. So yihi kavod chavercha, the kavod that your friend gives you, should be as honorable to you as if you were giving yourself that kavod, which means don't worry about it so much. Don't let it get to your head. Right? It's as if you're giving yourself your own kavod, which isn't such a big deal. Right? So here the message isn't to honor others, it's that when others honor you, don't let it get to your head. Right? So it's not kavod for you to respect yourself. If you're the only one giving yourself kavod, then who cares? Right? That's actually disgraceful to you. So don't be so head over heels over yourself because somebody else is giving you some level of honor. So here we have two important messages about kavod. One, how we give kavod to others, and one, when we get kavod for ourselves, don't let it overtake you, don't let it get to your head. And then the Schus Avos in the next section here, same source, but next section, Schus Avos, Kasav Lefarish, Shiritzona Lomar Shekemot, She'en Chamachbid, Al Sha'ata En Chamachabed Es Atzmacha, just like you don't care if you don't, you don't get angry at yourself, I guess most people don't get angry at themselves for not giving themselves honors. So if people don't give you the honor that you think you deserve, don't worry about it. Just like you don't get bothered by the fact that you don't give yourself the honor, so don't be bothered if other people don't give you the honor. So it's really, it's in the same category of basically flipping the Mishnah on its head and not talking about giving other people kavod. It's relating to how other people give you kavod. And there's two separate messages. Message number one is that when people give you kavod, don't let it get to your head. It's as if you're giving yourself kavod. And lesson number two is if you don't get kavod from other people, don't let that bother you. Act as if you're, it's really you giving kavod, which doesn't really matter. It doesn't affect you at all. So either way, it's talking about this second set of explanations is talking about how other people give you or don't give you kavod, not the kavod you give to other people. Okay, what I want to close with, yeah, fine.
Don't probably Musser always make the point of it's not quite denigrating yourself, but certainly don't hold yourself in any point of recognition of your own
No, so the one thing that would be in opposition would be the thing that I said, source number 7, which says that you have to honor yourself before you can honor other people. But I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I think this isn't saying to be arrogant. This isn't saying to let it get to your head. It's saying that at the very least you have to have some level of self-dignity and comport yourself with some level of dignity for your kavod to mean anything to anybody else. And I'm adding that maybe for you to have the ability to give kavod to other people, you need to have some level of self-respect. I don't think that's saying let it get to your head. And now, this actually circles back to a different discussion we had a few months ago, where I think we spoke about something similar when we spoke about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai giving praise to his students. Right? There's a similar discussion we had. What does it mean he's giving praise to his students? We usually don't think about ourselves and, you know, giving ourselves this praise. So we said maybe he's giving other people praise, so it's okay. So we had a similar discussion. I refer you back to that year for a further analysis. Yeah, one last thing, and then we're going to finish up. Yeah.
Actually, without much of a stretch, apply those three to each one of the statements.
To each, yeah.
Each one of the statements, all three elements of pressure, whether it's, you know, honoring your friend, or controlling your anger, or doing shabbat, they all involve issues within yourself, issues.
So, I'm just going to repeat it because they might not have heard it on the recorder. But I was thinking about this as I said it. I decided not to say it, but I think that it's 100% true. I made a similar point when I spoke at Midrash Yom Rishon, is that really all three things, Bein Adam L'Chaver, Bein Adam L'Makom, Bein Adam L'Atzmo, I think Dr. Pander is saying it perfectly, within each statement, you have each three elements. And I think you can say that with almost any mitzvah. When you think about it, there might be a primary point where this mitzvah we categorize as Bein Adam L'Makom. But you could very easily, so let's start the other way. Any Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, let's start with that. Any mitzvah that's between man and man, between humans and humans, is related to God, right? Because God wants you to relate to that. The Torah is telling us, do that. So any Bein Adam L'Chaveiro is automatically a Bein Adam L'Makom. And then you could obviously easily add that I need to internalize it and be a certain character in order to be able to do that Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. So there's an interspersion, and you know they're concentric. There's a, what are they called, Venn diagram, right? So each one, they all overlap with each other, and it's a matter of emphasis. What do you get? What's more Bein Adam L'Chaveiro? What's more Bein Adam L'Makom? What's more Bein Adam L'Atzmo? But they each overlap well. I won't forgive you for Bein Adam L'Makom until you do the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Good. Okay, so now let's finish up, and this is going to be a teaser for next week. So this is the last thing that we're doing for this week, is going to sort of lead us into next week, and just to review the background. So we're going to talk about Kavod, but we're going to do it in relationship to our original question. Our original question was, why does it say three things if there aren't really three things? And one of the moves that we said we could make, and Dr. Fruchter said it, is that we could connect one and two together, right? We could connect one and two together. So we're about to see, based on Rashi and elaborated on in the Medrash Shmuel, is that we're going to connect answers one of kavod and two of anger together. And it's going to be a segue to speak about anger for next week. So source number 9, Rashi says, Heim amru shloshet varim, kol echad me'elu chamisha tamidim. Each one of these five students said three things. Yehi kevod chaverecha chaviv alecha kishelcha. Eim asai, when should your, or when will your honor be for others? Bizman shelote noach lechos. If you're not angry, if you don't get angry easily, that's the way to get your kavod. That's the way to give other. If you want to give other people kavod, you can't get angry easily. So Rashi connects one and two together. The goal is kavod. The only way to be able to give kavod to somebody else is to work on your anger. If you're angry, you're not going to be able to give kavod. That's how Rashi connects one and two. In source number 10, the Medrash Shmuel flips it a little bit differently, and says that the emphasis, according to Rashi, the emphasis is on kavod, and anger is sort of ancillary. Mentor Shmuel says the emphasis is on anger, and the kavod is really the ancillary. So we're connecting one and two, but just flipping it. So the Mentor Shmuel says here, source number 10, Beli nira de efshar ki hashtei chalukos harishonos heim achas. One and two are connected. The kavanos or belezer lizar al akas. Main point is anger. Va'amar in tirtzel liknos mi dazu shalote noach lichos. If you want to not get angry, hishtadel shiyeh kavod chavercha chaviv alecha kesholcha, then you need to be able to honor your friend. If you work on honoring your friend, v'ahavtalo kamocha, then alti noach lichos, you're not going to get angry. And then he continues and elaborates on that idea. But the point here is that one and two are connected, either because in order to, according to Rashi, in order to honor your friend, you have to work on your anger. According to Major Shmuel, the emphasis is the opposite. In order to work on your anger, you have to honor your friend. Basically saying the same thing, but just in a matter of emphasis. Next week, we're going to speak about anger in detail. There's a lot of good stuff on anger. I think there's a lot of lessons we can take away and that we can incorporate and internalize within ourselves to be able to live a better ben adam l'makom, ben adam l'chaver, ben adam l'atzmo type of identity. There's a lot to do, so come back next week. Make sure you catch that.